From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Representatives of more than 50 nations were in attendance at the opening of the Nuclear Security Summit in Washington Thursday. However, Russia, which has, according to U.S. estimates, at least 8,000 nuclear warheads, was not among them. CCTV's Daria Bondarchuk filed this report from Moscow.
The Nuclear Security Summit in Washington will bring together world leaders on a mission to reinforce their country's commitments to secure nuclear technologies and materials. Russia has attended three previous summits in Washington, D.C. in 2010, in Seoul in 2012, and in The Hague in 2014. However, at the end of the last summit, Russia said it had already decided it would not participate in the next one. Some countries interpreted that decision as a reaction to increased tensions with the United States. Russian experts say Russia's absence from the security summit does not mean that it intends to turn away from its previous summit commitments. Nor, they say, is it planning to give up its obligations under the United Nations nuclear body, the IAEA, or the Global Initiative to Combat Nuclear Terrorism. But Moscow maintains that while previous summits were useful in forging an international consensus on nuclear security and raising awareness of the nuclear terrorism threat, they've now run their course.
After these questions were successfully discussed in an informal way, and after a number of commitments were made unilaterally and voluntarily, it's time for these questions to be transferred to long-existing mechanisms, such as the Global Initiative to Combat Nuclear Terrorism, if we speak about nuclear terrorism, and the IAEA, if the talk is about physical security of nuclear materials.
Russia says the Nuclear Security Summit, however well-intentioned, has become a source of interference for large international bodies whose work should be paramount, most importantly the IAEA, and for that reason, Moscow says, it can no longer be part. Vladimir Bondarchuk, CCTV, Moscow.
Meanwhile, Russia's envoy to NATO, Alexander Grishko, said Wednesday that Moscow would not sit passively and watch the U.S. and NATO military build up in Europe, saying his country would provide an asymmetrical response. He said Russia's response will be highly efficient, not overly expensive, and calibrated in accordance with Russia's understanding of the military threat it faces. Those comments came in response to a recent Pentagon announcement that the U.S. was readying a more robust military presence in Eastern Europe. On Wednesday, the Pentagon revealed plans to position American troops, tanks, and other armored vehicles full-time along NATO's eastern borders to deter what it called Russian aggression, the first such deployment since the end of the Cold War. Much of those assets would be placed along Russia's borders. The White House approved the broad contours of the plan, designated to start in February of next year, when it signed off on the $3.4 billion European Reassurance Initiative budget last month, leaving the specifics to the Pentagon. Congress still has to approve the request. As the presidential primary season continues, and Bernie Sanders appeared to be gaining on Hillary Clinton after the most recent primary victories that were very lopsided in his favor, both Clinton and Sanders turned their eyes to New York. Both Democratic candidates were in New York City Thursday. Linda Perry reports.
Hillary Clinton is trying to reconnect with New Yorkers in advance of the New York primary. She held a rally at the Apollo Theater in Harlem on Wednesday.
But I don't have to tell you, this is a wild election year. I'm not taking anything or anyone for granted.
Meanwhile, the Amsterdam News endorsed Clinton for president. They wrote, "Our nation sits on the precipice. We have two formidable candidates running for the Democratic nomination." While Senator Bernie Sanders believes that he is a revolutionary who will change the face of politics and claims to have been part of the good fight for decades, we ask at the Amsterdam News if he has been part of the struggle. Did we just miss all those protests in Vermont about voter suppression and civil rights?
Meanwhile, her rival for the Democratic nomination, Bernie Sanders, was up in the South Bronx with a few notable endorsements of his own. This was actor Rosario Dawson speaking about Clinton's criticism of Sanders.
There's this rumor that is being perpetuated that Trump talking about abortion and punishing women and doctors then for it, that somehow Bernie Sanders was saying that that wasn't an important issue. Regardless of the fact that he's always stood up for women's rights, equal pay, equality, and is pro-choice, which the other Democratic candidate very well knows, there is this rumor that is pitching out there that because he's saying that we're giving Trump too much time on the airways and we need to stop feeding into that hate and talking about the issues, that somehow that meant that he doesn't care about women's issues. Shame on you, Hillary.
The Sanders rally in the South Bronx was emceed by none other than Hollywood legend Spike Lee.
It's great to be here. Again, I'm not a public speaker. You got to register to vote. New York City is the greatest city on earth. And Bernie has to win New York City. Bernie has to win New York. Even Staten Island.
Sanders himself also stressed the importance of the New York primary, saying that if he could win that, he would win the White House.
On April 19th, this state will be having a very important primary. If there is a large voter turnout, we will win. And if we win here in New York, we are going to make it to the White House.
For an update on some of the most recent campaign activities, we spoke with Professor Anthony Montero, author and activist from Philadelphia, via Skype Friday. Professor Montero, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Don. Pleasure to be with you again.
So, a lot of developments. We had last week the route, really, of Hillary Clinton by Bernie Sanders in three states, 75% or better piece of the vote for Sanders. Coming into April, you have New Jersey, New York, a bunch of other big states, and both Clinton and Sanders were in New York City yesterday. Looking at the landscape, there's been the constant attacks by the media on Trump. CNN seems like it's the Trump gotcha network with all the focus that they have, and his position on abortion, which was not really fairly represented in the clips that were played back. They pose a hypothetical that if abortion is outlawed, do you prosecute women for having abortions? And first he said yes, then he said, and that is the big news of the day. It just seems that the actual issues that people have been expressing concern about, both by supporting Trump and Sanders, for that matter, the loss of legitimacy of the political establishment, the economic problems that people are facing, in considerable depth at this point, all of that is being pushed off the screen in favor of these gotcha moments.
Yeah. Well, and the gateway to New York State's primary goes through Wisconsin. And it seems like the Sanders momentum of last weekend will continue on this Tuesday in Wisconsin, where it looks like he is going to have a huge victory in a primary state where they vote. And a part of that victory, according to polls, will be that upwards of 50% of African Americans who say they're Democrats and will vote on that day are trending towards Sanders. And it's reported that Hillary Clinton's campaign has more or less abandoned Wisconsin and are trying to create a firewall in New York State. So, and the same thing for the Republicans, although it's quite different in this sense, that the anti-Trump forces are making a stand in Wisconsin. And it's very difficult to say what's going to happen, although Cruz at the present time is leading in the polls, but the polls have been so inaccurate on these things that it's hard to say. Nonetheless, it is clear that the ruling class has a united, all-out effort to stop Trump. Now, the question is, why are they trying to stop Trump? Clearly, of the candidates that they have going into the November election, he's the strongest. Cruz would be decimated by Sanders or Clinton. But they have to stop Trump because not of his crazy and wild statements concerning immigration and Muslims and terrorism and now abortion, which you're right about. I heard the interview. It was a hypothetical put to him, and he didn't know how to answer it. He's over his head in many respects. But what they are really targeting is his position on trade, on U.S. military bases, and on the U.S. nuclear arsenal, which under the Obama administration, and certainly if it's Hillary Clinton, under a Clinton administration, would be in this process of $1 trillion modernization program, which many say is modernizing for the sake of allowing the United States to have a first strike capability against Russia and China.
No, and that's all playing out right now while the nuclear summit is taking place in Washington, D.C., with almost 60 countries there. But the one notable country that's missing, Russia, has the largest single stockpile of nuclear warheads. And that's a direct consequence of the Obama administration's policy towards Russia.
Yeah, yeah. And probably the sense that the Russians realize, Putin's government realizes, that this is more of a show than of substance. I mean, you know, they're going to talk about nuclear weapons, but there is no mechanism or framework in place for a treaty to limit the production of nuclear weapons, because that would go against the Obama administration's policy of modernizing its nuclear arsenal and creating these new cruise missiles and these smaller warheads. So I think it's a charade. I don't know what the Chinese role in this whole thing is, but Russia and the Putin government have, I think, a legitimate case in not being there.
President Xi expressed strongly while he's in Washington that China will not tolerate the United States either dictating policy to it or interfering with its, you know, national sovereignty and national interests.
Absolutely.
Russia pointed out that the framework for the actual reduction and or elimination of nuclear weapons already exists. This summit is one that was a product of Obama's visit to Czechoslovakia back in which it was at the time back or in the Czech Republic, excuse me, back in 2009, actually 7 years ago this month, where he promised to work on the elimination of nuclear weapons. And here we are 7 years later, and he's throwing $1 trillion into upgrading them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think we have to face facts. I mean, the Obama administration, including Hillary Clinton, is a war administration. And probably of all of the hawks in the Obama administration, Clinton is the most hawkish of all of them. And that comes out in a series of articles and some WikiLeaks emails and so on and so forth. And that's in Ukraine, that's in Libya, that's in Syria. And probably as relates to pushing up against Russia through Ukraine and through the Baltic states. So we are in the midst of a war preparation, and it's this accelerated pace was started in the Obama administration. And what Hillary is running for is to consolidate and continue that direction. And we should not have any illusions. The key issues from the standpoint of the ruling class, that's the Wall Street billionaire class, the central question is not the welfare of the American people, but the consolidation and defense of the American empire, which means the trade deals like Trans-Pacific Partnership and these 1,000 or so military bases. And the third part of this is the upgrading of the nuclear arsenal. So that's what this is about. Now, a lot of people, you know, misunderstand what the political equation is. And, for example, the Trump is a fascist mantra overlooks Hillary Clinton. And, you know, and I, you know, say almost satirically, I guess some people prefer their fascist wearing dresses. And if that is the case, if the Stop Trump movement is successful, which is in fact a elect Hillary Clinton movement, where the left is doing the street organizing, or part of the left is doing the street organizing on behalf of the Clinton campaign, if that is successful, we will have the most hawkish president in the history of the United States. And I don't say that lightly. She makes Truman and Nixon and even Reagan look like peace activists.
Damn. You know, they're rallying against Trump because he spoke about the that NATO had perhaps outlived its usefulness, and NATO mm-hmm. was one of the prongs of that policy. They moved it right up to the borders of Russia. Mm-hmm. He's talking about closing bases, basically. He hasn't said the word closed bases, but he's looking at the expense of maintaining those bases and talking about passing the expense off to the locals, which I assume would include also having them put their personnel in charge of the bases and of their own defense. That, of course, would be a major impediment to the actualization of this policy that's been, you know, underway more or less since 1991, mm-hmm. certainly 1993. Sanders has been rather tepid on foreign policy. You know, he makes some broad statements about the need for peace and the need to not do regime change. He said that recently. But he hasn't been very aggressively attacking the overall foreign policy, U.S. imperialism particularly. I don't think I've really heard him mention those two words in the same sentence. And Trump isn't doing quite that, but he's opening up the space for Sanders. Now, Sanders this past week said essentially, here is a list of demands that we would make upon Clinton if she wins the nomination for her to get our support. That mm-hmm. comes after a poll earlier this month, Wall Street Journal and NBC, that showed a third of Sanders supporters don't see themselves voting for Clinton under any circumstances. And, of course, you know, the machinations of the party apparatus in favor of Clinton are going to most likely alienate more of those voters. Mm-hmm. Do you see the possibility of a groundswell from Sanders supporters to add to the list of demands that they would present to Clinton, and given some of the space that Trump has opened up on foreign policy, some serious foreign policy demands?
Oh, I think so. And, you know, Don, if you recall, over the last, I guess, 3 weeks or maybe a month of our conversations, you know, it was my judgment early on that the Trump and Sanders movements had more in common with one another than either had with the elites and the establishment of their respective parties. And the other thing that I thought would be the case is that increasingly the Sanders people, the movement, would be listening to what the Trump movement is saying and what Trump himself is saying. And this back and forth, this kind of feedback between the two would produce positives on each side. And I think the positive thing on the Sanders campaign would be Trump's anti-militarist, anti-interventionist stance, not without contradictions. And I say that because if you make any statement that seems to be see something positive in the Trump movement, then you're immediately met with a list of the contradictory statements that he has made. The fact of the matter is, at the core of what we see is a non-traditional populist, non-politician leading a movement that says over and over and over again, we cannot afford the American empire and its military bases, and we cannot afford these trade deals like Trans-Pacific Partnership. In this respect, he is to the left not only of Clinton, but of Sanders. And he makes a case, a stronger case in many respects than Sanders makes, because he is talking about reinvesting in the rebuilding of the United States. For example, when he talks about black youth unemployment. Now, he says that he is for, in cities like Baltimore, and I'm certain Philadelphia, creating economic zones to employ these unemployed youth. Now, he contradicts himself when he's against raising the minimum wage. But nonetheless, we're looking at an imperfect situation. But what is so significant is something that he's doing something analogous to what the British had to do after World Wars I and World War II, those two world wars, and admit that they could no longer afford the empire. And when they drew back, what came out of that was probably the greatest institution of social welfare in the British society, and that's the national health system. It was a kind of a reward to and a concession to the British trade union and working class movement, withdrawing from the empire and investing in the rebuilding of British society after World War II. That is something very similar to what Trump is saying. And I think it's going to affect the Sanders movement. I think when you hear people like Susan Sarandon saying that, and she got it kind of confused and messed up, I think. But I think there's something there when she says she could not vote for Clinton and that a Trump presidency would be preferable to a Clinton presidency because she said a Trump presidency would hasten the revolution. Now, I don't know what it all means, but the idea that a Trump presidency is preferable to a Clinton presidency has the liberals going crazy. But I think she has a point.
You know, one of the things that caught my attention on this this point was stimulated by the anniversary yesterday, the 48th anniversary of the speech Lyndon Johnson gave when he announced he was not going to run for re-election in 1968, yes. Which was 4 years after he won the biggest landslide in U.S. history up to that point.
Absolutely.
And that was 4 days before the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. Dr. King had drawn a very clear point that the failure of the Great Society was due to the fact that the U.S. was spending money on the military in Vietnam. And Johnson's resignation a year after King pointed that out in April of 67 was more or less a punctuation mark to that. And it's almost like they murdered King to just do cleanup work on that point. Mm-hmm. Trump is now invoking exactly the same dynamic, essentially, rhetorically at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, I would say the Trump movement. You know, I looked at the town hall that CNN had in Wisconsin and in Milwaukee. And, you know, I listened to the questions and the identities of the questionnaires. And I would say almost 80% of all of the questions came from people who were small business people, which is not Trump's base. I don't know how that came about, but that class would be predisposed to the Republican establishment, not to an insurgency against it. Trump's base is an insurgent movement, an insurgency within the Republican Party. And that is what all of the talk about Trump is a fascist is an attempt to obscure, this insurgency from the conservative, more conservative voting elements of the white working class. And I would say this insurgency goes way beyond 1968 or even 1972 with McGovern, because it is an insurgency which poses an existential crisis for the Republican Party and, by implication, for the two-party system of a bourgeois or Wall Street rule of the American nation. I think this, all of this, is a manifestation of what can only be understood as a systemic crisis. The people feel that they have been lied to. For example, the big lie of recovery from the 2008 Great Depression. Anybody that works for a living or anybody that has to shop or has to live day to day knows there has not been any recovery. Wages are lower than they were before the Great Recession, and they're back to 1970s level. So the people feel they've been lied to. They've been lied to about foreign policy, all of these wars. They've been lied to, and they are rejecting the lie. That is more passionate and more pointed in the Trump movement, ironically, than in the Sanders movement, but it is in both movements. This is a moment of working class and lower middle class and poor people's insurgency against the elites that are the political, that command the political heights of this society. If you miss that, you do not understand the time of day that we are living in.
Professor Montero, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you very much, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.